I just Googled happiness. I got a whopping 103 million entries. Authentic happiness, finding happiness, the science of happiness, the way to happiness, the secret of happiness. You know, we're either the unhappiest people in history or the most relentlessly passionate about pursuing happiness. If you scroll far enough down that list of entries, you'll find one for historian Darren McMahon's new book, Happiness, A History, which is the place to go when you want to put it all in perspective. I asked McMahon what he thinks. Are we obsessed with happiness?
Well, I think to a certain extent we are, and I think this has kind of been coming for some time. A critical shift in human expectations occurs or begins to occur in the 18th century when human beings begin to think of happiness as not something that can only be attained in the afterlife or only be attained in this world by an elite few who, you know, have the favor of the gods or have supreme virtue, but rather happiness is something that we should have by virtue of being human beings. And I think slowly what happens is that happiness, in effect, becomes a kind of modern god or a modern type of salvation. We want it from all things and in all things. And since the 18th century, our expectations have only grown.
Because we may need to define what we're talking about, because we all remember Jefferson authorizing us to pursue happiness. But are we talking about the same thing?
Well, yes and no. I think it's fair to say that beginning in the 18th century, happiness becomes associated more and more with pleasure. And we think of happiness in these terms today, right? Happiness is something that puts a smile on your face. It makes you feel good. That's very far from an ancient Greek notion of happiness. It's very far, in some respects, even from the kind of assumptions that somebody like Thomas Jefferson would have. Jefferson certainly didn't have anything against good feeling, enjoyed pleasure. But if he says that happiness is the aim of life, he also says that virtue is the foundation of happiness. And Jefferson, like so many of the founding fathers, had a sense that without living virtuously, and by that they meant living in the service of the greater good, working for others, one couldn't be happy. And I'm not sure that we still share that idea today.
Yeah, today we seem to think of happiness as something that we deserve, I guess, more than we earn.
Right. In the 18th century, at least, the word pursuit has a harder meaning than it does today. The French say, for example, la chasse au bonheur, the hunt for happiness. And if you think of hunting happiness like stalking happiness, right? Well, what happens when you get there? You have to kill it. the idea that the pursuit of happiness sort of undoes what you're trying to attain in the process. I cite in at one place in the book, John Stuart Mill, the great English philosopher of the 19th century. And, you know, Mill says, the moment a man asks himself whether or not he's happy, he ceases to be so. It's a little bit sometimes I like to liken it to trying to fall asleep at night. You know, you've got a big meeting the next day and you say, I really have to get to sleep tonight. I must fall asleep. Of course, you never will like that, right? You have to sort of let go. And I think in some respects, pursuing happiness is the same way.
Now, actually, that sort of fits with what you have said was the historical perspective on happiness, though, isn't it? That originally happiness was like chance.
Right. I mean, happiness, as you say, is something that happens to you. If you go all the way back to the ancient Greeks, prior to Socrates and prior to the beginning of the kind of, you know, classical Greek philosophy, you have in Greek tragedy this idea that, you know, you should call no man happy until he's dead, because as you say, happiness is what happens to you, and we can't control that, right? The world is uncertain. Our happiness depends on the whims of the gods, on fortune, on chance, and the word for happiness in every Indo-European language going all the way back to the ancient Greeks is cognate with luck. So in English, we have the root of happiness is hap. It's an Old English and Old Norse word that means chance or fortune. And as you say, the idea here is that if you're happy, you're lucky, you're fortunate, good things happen to you.
What happens when people try to figure it out? I mean, religions have incorporated the idea of happiness, for instance. Has Christianity done happiness any good?
Well, I try to argue in the book that actually, if one wants to understand modern conceptions of happiness, that you need to think very seriously about both the Jewish and the Christian traditions. And I think that one thing that happens, beginning with the early church, and you can see this in somebody like St. Augustine. Augustine has experimented with other Greek philosophies, and he's frustrated by his inability to attain happiness. And when he comes to Christianity, he adopts this idea that because of our original sin, because of the transgression of Adam and Eve in the garden, that if we have happiness at all, it will come in the next life, and it will come with the assistance of God's grace. So Augustine and subsequent Christians sort of take happiness in this life off the table. But what that does is open up for them this field in which to project sort of the greatest sensual fantasies about the next life. So St. Thomas Aquinas in the Middle Ages can say that, you know, the pleasure that the saved will know when they gaze into God's eyes, as St. Paul says, is beyond anything we can possibly imagine. It will be like being continuously drunk. And you get this idea of ecstasy, of the total rapture of the next life. And I think what happens is that in the latter part of the 17th century and then into the 18th century, when people start to think about bringing heaven to earth, they transmute this Christian idea of perpetual happiness and secularize it. And I think in a certain way, that's our goal today, isn't it? Perpetual happiness, to be happy all the time in everything we do. It's a strange sort of coming to earth of an older religious concept. Hmm.
You know, it's funny. I feel foolish not to have seen it before, but in a way, what you're saying is that the pursuit of happiness in the days of Augustine was to remove all restrictions. I mean, you could imagine pure happiness and you didn't have to worry about it because that was going to happen in the next life.
Exactly. And you didn't have to blame yourself either when you weren't happy, right? Unhappiness was the way life is, right? Life is full of suffering.
Which and means that in some ways they were happier being unhappy than we are pursuing happiness.
Well, I'm not sure, but I do think that the revolution that occurs in the 17th and 18th century is liberating in many respects. I mean, it's liberating to tell people, you know, you don't have to wait until death to have happiness. You should be able to enjoy your food and your body and your friendships and so forth. And this is important and liberating. But as you suggest, the potential downside here is that it creates an obligation, right? We're suddenly responsible for our happiness. We're supposed to be happy. And when we're not, it becomes increasingly difficult to explain why. And so we're either left to blame ourselves for our inability to attain happiness, and I call this the unhappiness of not being happy, or we blame others or other things.
Of course, it also follows a kind of track. It started with religion, it went to realism, and now it's all in the hands of the psychologists.
Well, in some respects, I mean, I think this, you know, psychologists have taken over or moved into a realm that was once occupied by preachers and theologians and so forth. And I think it's fair to say that there's something of a consensus today among people who study this sort of thing that at least a large proportion of our predisposition to positive affect or mood is probably genetically determined. That positive psychologists speak of a set point. The metaphor is of a thermostat that we can kind of burn hot or cold, fluctuate above our natural set point. We're happy for a while and dip below it. But over the course of time, we tend to revert to this natural set point. And no matter what happens to us, whether we win the lottery or, you know, have a terrible accident, the research on this is actually really very interesting.
But it does suggest that that they're looking for a thermostat so that they can set your set point a little higher.
Well, absolutely. And I think, first of all, it's very difficult to say what a normal level of happiness would be, right? What an average place on the set point would be. How do we say to somebody, well, sorry, you know, you lost in the genetic lottery. You know, your set point is just going to be artificially low. There's nothing we can do about it, when we increasingly know that there are things we can do about it, either through medication or perhaps someday genetic manipulation. And that opens, you know, a can of worms that is disturbing in some respects.
Is this primarily a Western consideration, or is this humankind as a whole?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I think there's some very interesting books to be written on conceptions of happiness across cultures. And it's undoubtedly the case that in the Buddhist tradition, the Hindu tradition, one has rumination and discussion about happiness. My sense is that something peculiar happens in the West after this tragic phase that I talked about earlier, when Socrates says, look, we know that all human beings want happiness. Let's figure out how we can attain it, not depending on the gods, but through our own action. Virtue, Socrates says, and Plato picks this up, and Aristotle picks this up. Virtue must be the way to happiness. We can attain happiness on our own. I think that that sends Western thought, Western speculation about politics and ethics and so forth in a particular direction. So it may well be that the pursuit of happiness is in some ways more pronounced in the Western tradition than others. But I think that, you know, that question remains open, and I would invite people out there to think about it and tell me what they come up with.
Darren McMahon, talking about his new book, Happiness, A History. McMahon teaches at Florida State University in Tallahassee, where they call him the Happy Prof.